If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Stage one, stage two, internal auto.
Here we go.
This has started.
So what you just missed is we just got this on air. Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah.
To internal power.
They just did this whole thing. Like, you guys are out here. You accept the risks. There could be debris, tidal waves, whatever. It's basically like, it's like this. You want to talk about the ULA, ULA, whatever you say. How do you say
ULA?
ULA. Thank you. Thank you, Molly Wood. End all ULAs. Basically, if this rocket blows up and all that, by us being, and we have no way out of here now, by the way. It's not like we can be like, oh, no, I didn't know that. And then, you know.
Ask Molly, EULAs aren't enforceable.
Yeah, they're not enforceable? No.
It's enforceable if we're dead.
If we're dead, okay.
That counts, actually, yeah.
All right, well.
So don't
Justin
die.
Is my closest kin. that would understand what this means.
Sure, I got you.
I'm not going to say, but somebody was laughing at me. My mom's right now.
I was laughing. That was adorable. I was not laughing.
Wow, you were raised by chimps? I swear she said that.
He has a really good mom.
So now, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, from where you are, where's the launch? Because we can see the SpaceX feed kind of in the upper left.
I don't know if you can see my finger, but that's the thing imaging right there, the Millennium
kidding.
Falcon's wing right there.
Yes.
That's it right there. And so it's cool. So this is, we can actually see, you know, we can see part of the gantry details.
Absolutely. All right, here. Well, Andrew, we are joined now by Brian. So let's just, for the podcast, do a real quick intro, and this will be the podcast proper.
The Earth is round. And if you go fast enough,
we go for launch,
which means that they're go for launch. So we're waiting now.
The Air Force Range Control Officer will
hold on.
Range as well.
A lot of approval has to go in here. So wait, 2 minutes or
2 minutes?
Okay,
2 minutes. Two minutes until launch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are 2 minutes until launch. This is the Weird Things podcast. I'm Justin Robert Young in studio in Petaluma, California at the Twit Studios. Joining me live on the ground is Andrew Main. Andrew, what is the feeling right now as you count down? It is go for launch. We are T-minus 2 minutes.
Well, I think there's a lot of relief for people here that they're not going to have to reschedule flights. I would say first and foremost. No, I mean, it's exciting. I mean, this is really cool because this is like one of the closest places it can be.
Of course, joining us as always is Brian Brushwood. Brian, how are you doing?
Oh, my gosh, I'm so super excited about this. Now, when you say you're as close as you can be, how far off are you? Are we talking miles or tens of miles? How much can you see there?
It looks 40 feet. We're 30 seconds and counting here, guys.
All right, so we are at 40 seconds, and also joining us, Tom Merrick. Tom, how you doing?
Good. I can't wait to see us have private resupply of the International Space Station.
And that is, of course, what's at stake. We are watching live as Andrew broadcasts to us. We also have the SpaceX feed up here, but I'll tell you what, I'll just let it go silent so we can hear things go on.
53 seconds.
Be commanded to start up.
First stage engines chilled in.
Flight computers in auto idle.
T-minus 1 minute.
Flight computers in startup.
Flight computers now in control of the vehicle.
Flight computer now controlling the vehicle at T-minus 53 seconds.
No people.
Standing by for the propellant tanks to flight pressure.
So that feed you hear is about 15 seconds behind.
And three seconds
here. I was corrected.
It's me every time.
Seven, six, five, four,
3, 2, 1. And
lift off. Wow.
Holy cow.
I'm just going to do just a quick pan so you can see how bright it is here. It's getting very loud now.
Yeah. And again, for audio listeners, I mean, the descriptor from their point of view is just a sun.
Very metal.
It does. It looks just like the corona of a sun going up into space.
So, and we are off. I mean, this is a what looks to be a successful launch, different than the initial test run where they did have to scrub the first attempt and then came back 3 days later and successfully launched. This one goes off on the initial run, and wow, I'll tell you what, you can see the HD feed from SpaceX. It just looks gorgeous, looks amazing.
Andrew, did you feel any wind, any heat?
We wouldn't feel wind just yet. We're feeling the sound, so if there's going to be wind or heat, that's going to be in a little bit. Give us a little more time, and I'll let you know. We're still several miles away, but... Now, what will happen is you see the glow up there, and we've got more cloud cover than we had last time, so we're going to lose track of it more quickly. But when they do a separation, if we wait, we'll be able to see a bright thing come back down, which totally fooled Justin and I last time.
Yes.
We're like a couple of chimps trying to figure out this shiny, fiery object.
About 2.5 minutes into the flight, 6 miles high and traveling at 10 times the speed of sound.
Wow. Mach 10.
Engines will shut down to reduce the rocket's acceleration, followed by the remaining 7 engines.
Now, the difference between this and the last flight is this has cargo, and it's gonna dock and transfer the cargo, right?
Yes. It's a functional flight, and this is part of the regular NASA manifest now. This is keeping the ISS in stock and a functioning space mission now. And the first one was a test one to see if it would work, and it did. And so now this becomes routine in a way from here on out. I mean, nothing's ever routine when you go into space, but it certainly is a, exciting thing to think about that, our capability in space has been officially, changed now.
All car passengers need to stay in place until buses depart. All cars need to stay in place until buses depart.
Stop trying to drive closer.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now there was cargo on the test flight, but it was non-critical cargo. Do you know what's in this one?
One of the co-broadcasters here explained that a lot of the equipment has to do with dealing with urine, apparently. Apparently bodily functions are a pretty big deal in space.
Yeah, they would be.
They can land a man on the moon, but they can't stop you from peeing.
A lesson that we all have learned now on this a very special episode of Weird Things.
It's all about pee.
Yeah, Molly says it's all about pee now.
Which, for those of you just listening now, the Molly that Andrew's referring to is, in fact, CNET's Molly Wood. Who is also there watching the SpaceX
CBS
launch.
Now.
CBS, sorry.
Are we seeing a separation right now from the SpaceX feed?
We're going to try to get a scoop on here. She says she may have taken the best photo ever. And so,
separation's happening on SpaceX. Can you see anything, Andrew?
Right now, nothing because of the cloud cover, but we'll see.
It would be upon reentry or coming back down.
Yeah. Let's look at it.
Don't get fooled.
Yes.
You see your photo?
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm like, what are you doing? It's this one.
See if it's too bright. But just the brightness from that image. I mean, it is.
Like this one looks like I'm just taking a photo of the sun.
Yeah, it looks like.
That's unbelievable. This one has all the smoke at the bottom. And the water.
That's wonderful.
Oh, my God. It's my permanent new wallpaper.
So one of the things that I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I was going to say that one of the things that was so important to us the last time we saw a SpaceX launch was that it meant a fundamental shift in the way we handle space travel and resupply as far as what is possible. Do you feel like in some ways this launch is even more important in that it's not the possibility but the realization of the fact? Or is it a case where that it's more of the same at this point?
Oh, sorry, I lost you out there. I think you know, what this means now is that private space launch, private space enterprise, in sort of a very new way. And since we have other companies have done sort of launch, you know, provide launch services, but in this sort of in a radical new way, is a reliable part of our space program. And I think it will tend to make it bigger and capable of doing a lot more than we could have done before.
Now, just to keep everybody in the loop on what is happening right now, the Dragon spacecraft will launch 1,000 pounds of cargo for astronauts living on the space station, and the crew plans to welcome the spacecraft this Wednesday, October 10th. So SpaceX, they usually provide live streams for this. I'm sure this will be no different. You can make sure to tune in then to show that landing, docking with the International Space Station.
Well, and I think it what
they're walking us.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh no, well, they're walking us back towards the buses, but I'm going to hang out by the bus as long as we can, so we can try and see the other stage.
The separation of the stage. Well, I think what hit me the most is the fact that this is them sending stuff that the International Space Station is relying on. And it's not like there's going to be a disaster if something were not to work, but they need this stuff. Like, this is not a test. This is not a, let's see if it works. This is, hey, this stuff needs to get up there, and we're relying on a private company, SpaceX, to bring it there.
No, Brian, to your point.
Yeah, it's real. It's reliable.
You know, you mentioned, you know, is this more of the same? I think that there is, to me, a very, very exciting element of, you know, the kind of mundane element of this that, like, you know, that, yeah, it's like, yeah, we're sending another rocket to the International Space Station. Like, that's what we want to get to. That's the goal. That is really what changes everything. And the fact that now we are looking at this, there is a fundamental paradigm shift that even for fans of SpaceX and fans of space travel, that now we are looking toward, well, yes, this is going to succeed and go forward and will continue to evolve, instead of kind of clenching up and hoping that this doesn't go wrong and set everything back 15 years.
Right. Well, and also, we have talked on Weird Things several times before about the big news, of course, with this is the massive increase in efficiency. What was the last estimate that we were kicking around as far as the dollar per pound that we're seeing on this SpaceX flight versus what you were able to get on the space shuttle?
Well, remember that with a SpaceX flight, for this particular, like, when you're doing a NASA, when you're basically doing a government mission, it's going to be different than if you were, you know, Martin Marietta or somebody trying to launch a satellite into space, because you have to go through a lot more sort of government oversight and other controls like that. It's part of the space industry right behind me here. I'm not going to name names, but
we can see faces. So
that is Yuri Gagarin back in the famous Soviet cosmonaut. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Drunk. Yeah. Very. Yeah.
Now this is a.
I don't know what.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Go ahead. So we. You're doing a land mission. I mean, it's going to be different than when you're doing, you know, when you're just launching a telecommunication satellite, because anything done by the government's going to have everything to be in triplicate. So it's a different kind of cost thing than if, you know, you guys wanted to launch something.
But
we are certainly orders of magnitude less than what it would cost to do a shuttle mission.
Now, just to point out, the Dragon capsule was designed for crewed missions, and they are currently looking to do eventually crewed missions on the Falcon 9 rockets using the Dragon capsules, at least to go to the International Space Station. You know, this is a real big deal. This particular launch is part of their deal with NASA. I'm trying to find the dollar sign on it, but I believe it's one point. Go ahead.
So, yeah, what you have here is the crew capsules it's going to have a entry system, so at any stage from launch to orbit, it could be able to land by itself and basically provide a failsafe. But the Falcon system itself, the launch capabilities, all that, and part of it, every time they do one of these launches, is going in towards building up reliability. By the time they put crew on one of these capsules or one of these rockets, they want to make sure that it's the most tested rocket in the history of aerospace, which when you look at the history of other, you know, space systems, when we were putting men on the Apollo, you know, we only had like two or three launches, you know, with that platform before we said, let's throw people on there.
Falcon 9 is actually in orbit now. It just got the official crossover from launch to orbit.
Amazing. Yeah, it is $1.6 billion to deliver 20 metric tons of supplies from Earth to the International Space Station, and that is a deal between NASA and SpaceX. There's also another firm, Orbital Sciences, which has a $1.9 billion deal for station
Orbital Sciences.
Yeah.
And Andrew, do you know what needs to be done to make this ready for passengers to be able to take crew up?
The biggest thing is that you could have, according to Elon Musk, if you put inside of the previous launches they've done, they would have had a nice trip. You didn't need to put a chair inside of there. But what they want to have to make it extremely safe as they can, is they want to have a rocket system built into the capsule itself. So at any stage when that rocket's taken off, the capsule can separate and then land back on the platform. That was the problem with the space shuttle. There was no escape system in the space shuttle, and you've got two solid rocket boosters attached to you that you can't shut off. And solid rocket boosters, you can't. And so these, you know, the rocket's already put to that advantage, but to make it safe enough by SpaceX standards, as safe as they want to make it, they want to get towards aviation level safety. They want to make it that at any point that they have, if they have to abort, that the top capsule can separate via rockets and then land safely. So that's going to be the biggest stage there for making that. Although you could put people in here right now if you wanted.
Now, Andrew, just to dial it back to what we saw.
There is a window in there.
To dial back to what we saw tonight, I know that there's usually there was last time for ISS launches a 3 second or a half, some infinitesimal amount of time window to launch. We heard before that it was a 60% chance of good conditions. What were you guys told in terms of the contingency plans for this?
It got down to a 50% chance that they were going to be able to make the launch. Off to the west here, you could see thunder. You could actually see lightning lighting up clouds. So they had to make sure that, you know, there wasn't going to be a problem with that. But they got the window. At a certain point, they turn it over to the computers. And, you know, at that point, once they get the weather okay, the humans make the decision if the weather's okay. Then the computers go in there. And if there's a little bit of a hiccup or something like we saw the first time when they had a pressure gauge, gave them a reading that they didn't think was nominal, you know, it computer shut down the launch.
Now, one interesting thing, the solar arrays just deployed. Can you explain what the solar arrays on Dragon do?
So they, you know, when, you know, Dragon is a robot. It's basically a robot that's going to, it takes off from here. It's going to, you know, have to do some maneuvers and calculations to intercept the space station. When you look at the docking procedure, it's really elaborate. So there's a computers on there. There's a lot of hardware on there that has to make a lot of decisions and their power system and stuff. So the solar arrays are used to actually help recharge the systems to keep power to it, which, you know, give it a longer lifespan. And I don't know how critical they are to the function of it when you're launching to the ISS, but they want to build a platform that they can do a lot of things on there, that you could put instrumentation on there. You could actually, you know, send one of these into orbit by itself and do science missions within that capsule itself. So every time they send it up and they extend the solar arrays, one, it's a test to make sure they work. Two, you know, it actually can help supply power to their systems.
And it looks like just after they opened the solar arrays, they started having some downlink problems. So it's signals going in and out, coming back to Earth anyway.
Yeah. Stupid solar arrays.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you hear about, you know, you have two, is it, you know, SpaceX privately, of course, and then it has to have built into it a number of NASA systems. When you want to, you know, dock a station, you have a guidance system that is designed to work with the ISS, which is, you know, a separate system that has to be put in, built into that. And there are a lot of little things. We are doing a launch with NASA. You, of course, have the NASA communication systems. And so it is an amazing technical achievement when you think about that, when you have, you know, different parties working together to make this stuff work. And they just turned off the lights.
Come on. This is what kind of live stream friendly press environment is SpaceX providing?
Okay, whose bus are you riding?
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you to everybody who is joining us.
I guess the driver wants to see.
But you are joining us, if you're watching Twit right now, as a special live stream of the Weird Things podcast. Me, Justin Robert Young, Andrew Main, live in Cape Canaveral. Brian Brushwood and Tom Merritt is joining me here in studio. Andrew, right now, this is the most mysterious episode of Weird Things ever, as
well,
always.
Yeah, Andrew Main's on a black, dark bus.
Yeah.
The SpaceX capsule deployed the solar arrays and then lost the downlink, which isn't necessarily disturbing, but we don't have any pictures to show you of.
Sure. Because now we no longer have both SpaceX's visuals or Andrew's visuals.
Did you deploy your solar array, Andrew?
I have a live photo from space right now.
Yes, there we go. The deep, dark expanse of space. So Brian...
We're on the buses.
Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. I know, so you can say the little bit of background. I'm going to flip the camera for it so you can see. We are... So we're all loaded back onto the buses. And now, this is the long causeway. If anybody wants to go look on Google Earth... or Google Maps, you can see the big long stretch of it's basically a road going through the water, connecting us to the rest of the NASA facility. And this is what we're on back now. And you can see these are the buses. I think they have they do a limited number of people who come to the visitor center. Actually, can get passes to come see the launch.
Yeah, and is that like a lottery system, or
can enjoy? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they're like congressmen's girlfriends or
campaign contributors.
From NASA. I'm kidding.
So you're
the John Glenn Memorial bus, you know,
bringing you live coverage of Andrew Main personally trolling NASA employees. Brian. You know, obviously, this is very, very exciting to us, but it does have farther-reaching kind of implications. You know, if you were to describe to somebody else who's not necessarily science inclined what this means, what would you say?
I mean, the first and foremost, what we have is, this is significant in that it's the first paid gig. It's the difference between sort of them being amateurs and finally going pro with their first real gig, right? And that's significant. But what it means to the rest of us is that we're seeing the normalization of space travel. The fact that their stated goal is to reach a level of safety consistent with what we experience with air travel is nothing short of astonishing. I mean, think about, has there been a single major airline fatality in the last, half decade in the United States? We see essentially a world where 737s are safer to ride in than your own car. And if we're going to see at an affordable level that kind of experience happening with commercial space travel, I mean, let's face it, we could say all we want about what this means for mankind. We could say what we want as far as exploration. But at the heart of it, we're all 12-year-old kids right now thinking this is what's going to make it possible for me to see space in my lifetime. This is what is going to make it conceivable that 30 years from now, I could save up for a few weeks and buy a ticket and go experience what it's like to be one of those pioneers half a century ago in orbit around planet Earth. And I think that's the real thing. If there's something you're going to take away from what you're seeing here, is you're seeing the normalization of space travel.
Well, maybe you can save up in a few weeks, one percenter.
Okay.
No, we were talking about this before the show, Brian, and I made the same airline analogy, which we take for granted now, how difficult and complicated and dangerous airline travel can be just from the physics of it. Forget the whole security issue and booking and delays and all of that. Just getting an airplane that big, that heavy, and up in the air as thousands of times a day is an incredible test that we just think of as normal. now. And was not that long ago that people got on a plane and they dressed up and they thought of it as a big occasion and they looked out the windows and like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing the Earth from high up. And we're kind of on the cusp of that possibly happening with space, and this is a step along the way.
Or at least we can see what it would look like or what it will look like.
The 1920s
yeah.
was to airline travel, I think.
You know, and then that is, I think that's what's so fascinating about it. And really, I think conceptually, it's really infinite of what we want to do past this. You know, like what's important to us? Is it space tourism, as Brian mentioned? Is it, you know, further explanation of the moon or possibly Mars? Is it something that we haven't really been able to think of conceptually in any kind of practical level because the idea of rockets regularly going into space wasn't, you know, what it could be or what it will be going forward? That's what I think is amazing, is that now, you know, today we can see that reality. We can see that platform.
And it pushes the edge out. It's no longer enough to explore and be dramatic and praising of something going up into orbital space. That becomes regular. And now we're like, we have to go out into the asteroid belt and into the moon and possibly Mars if we want to push the boundary forward.
Or even, I mean, like, look at, like, planetary resources, the idea of asteroid mining. You know, like, that was an idea. They did a press conference. They have a company, you know, that is a real thing based on the idea that this platform can and will be real. That's closer today than it was yesterday, and that's very exciting. Of course, following...
Hey, guys, if you got me back here.
Yes. Andrew, yeah, you are now back live.
Let me throw a couple Twitter feeds to follow. Follow at NASA Social on Twitter, and you can keep up to date on a lot of the different stuff they're doing, which is kind of their most social media engaged stuff. So that's at NASA Social on Twitter. You want to follow that, of course, SpaceX. And then also just at NASA. You know, there's a lot of great things going on now. You know, we've got a VW sized vehicle on Mars right now doing some amazing science. And
I thought it was a Mini
follow
Cooper.
Those feeds, I think. Yeah, sorry, my wrong size. Yes, Mini Cooper size. So by all means, you should subscribe to those Twitter's feeds, and I think you'll it's a great way to keep what's going on. I think we're in the most exciting period of space exploration ever, and you know, a big part of it you can follow by going to, again, at NASA Social and SpaceX and just at NASA.
Absolutely. And we would be remiss if we did not point out that NASA Social was the arm of NASA that put you on the buses that you're on now, that got you out there and made the visuals of this possible. So thank you very, very, very much to them. Speaking of Twitter feeds, at Elon Musk, Falcon 9 rocket booster has delivered Dragon to its target orbit. That's a pretty sweet thing. That's a pretty sweet day at the office.
How long are we looking at until we see the rendezvous with the International Space Station? It was a few days when on the test flight, wasn't it?
Wednesday.
Okay.
Wednesday is when, we hopefully we'll see
the docking.
Hey, guys, if I can pull Jason with NASA Social on here, do you want to have any questions for him?
Absolutely, sure.
What do we got? We're on right now twit.tv, so let me... give you that here, but don't worry, it's been
it's perfectly safe, perfectly hygienic.
He's a Q-tip
so
freak.
You can't see us, but I'll show you this. Then we'll go back to the camera view. So this is Jason. Jason's the coordinator with. You want to give me your official job title, or?
Yeah, guys. Hi, I'm Jason. I'm NASA's deputy social media manager. So.
Okay, well, Jason, I guess the first question I would ask. I can hear you. The first question that I would ask for you is, what kind of interest did you see in people wanting to cover this, and was it more or less than you've seen on other launches?
Well, each mission that we've done something related to social media at has been kind of unique and different, in that different missions have had different levels of interest. Obviously, as we approach the end of the shuttle program, leading up to that final shuttle mission and so on, our social media, anticipation and everything was off the charts for that, and it kept growing with each mission in that lead up and everything. But then we also had, things like the Curiosity rover and everything, and when we went and landed on Mars and so on, we had 2,500 people apply to be at JPL covering the event on social media, and we ended up having 25 spaces available. available. It broke my heart literally to turn down so many people who were so interested in, you know, promoting science and technology and engineering and math and everything we've got going on with the space and everything. And so it's been incredible interest. For this particular mission, we had way more qualified applicants than we had space for. And so, we're extremely cognizant of the fact that, you know, there's so much interest out there. We really do wish we could get everybody in and give them a wonderful experience. But, we've got to work within the budget and the resources that we have. And so, look for us next time.
Hey, Jason, tell them what that bright building is that we're heading towards.
I don't know if you guys can see it here, but there's a building up here that's called the Vehicle Assembly Building. It's pretty much the largest building here at Kennedy Space Center. And it's where they do all the rocket stacking. They stack all the shuttles in there. And it goes back to the Apollo days. And they also stack the Saturn V rockets in there. So,
wow.
The
largest building in the world.
It's pretty, pretty large. So if memory serves me correct, it's about 55 stories tall. And it has huge cranes that can handle, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tons of weight in order to move, you know, large objects around in there and everything. It's an incredible experience. And right now it is open to the public. So if you come and visit at the visitor complex here, you can get on one of the tours that will take you out here and you can go inside the Vehicle Assembly Building right now. So,
Jason... Jason, as an outside observer, it seems like the last few actions that NASA has taken have been extraordinarily social media savvy. Obviously, with the recent launch to Mars, we saw a theatrical style trailer. We have live tweeting from the rover itself. How much of that where did the decision to pay more attention to social media come from? Because it obviously seems to be paying out big dividends for you guys as far as publicity and goodwill. But I'm curious, like, how that decision came down.
Sure. So the foundation for why we do what we do actually goes all the way back to 1958 with the National Aeronautics and Space Act, which one of the things that when the agency was founded that we were charged with doing was disseminating exactly what we do, our activities and the results thereof, to the widest practical audience as possible. And so that's been one of our main elements that is required of us by law to do right from day one. And so, you know, as social media began to, reach that kind of critical point, critical mass, and had a lot of new audiences basically talking about us, whether we were there or not, we really realized this was a great opportunity to expand into. And, you know, it's social media today. It might be something however, you know, we can find traction on, you know, sharing as much information as we can with people. We're going to go there too. So whatever the next new platform is or the new tool or things like that, we're going to, you know, try to continue to figure out ways to get as much information out there to as many people as possible. So,
Jason, for you guys with the social media team, what do you consider the greatest benefit of reaching out?
The greatest benefit? I think that something that's interesting is that there's a lot of folks who I would call armchair space enthusiasts, where they are at home and they're not really connected to one another initially. And by bringing together kind of a community of space fanatics who absolutely love what we're up to and really want to know more information, you know, we can kind of put them all together and connect the dots for folks to get them connected in a community of other space followers. And that really has been very valuable as far as, you know, people finding out that they're not the only ones, they're not alone. And so that, kind of harnessing that community power to, go out there and spread the word to new audiences and new places that, you know, NASA on its own could never reach. So it's been an incredible experience.
This is Tom here, Jason. One thing that I've noticed that impresses me is how many crew actually will go onto Twitter and seemingly enthusiastically tweet. They're writing it themselves. It's obvious. Why do you think it is that crew don't see this as just kind of drudgery, but they seem to really enjoy reaching out to the fans?
Well, I mean, one of the things that, you know, we've always heard from folks who are the astronauts and things like that, and also our scientists and our engineers and other members of our workforce, is that they're extremely passionate about what they do. They love their jobs, and they realize that they have a really awesome job. And so, for the most part, you know, it doesn't take a lot of convincing to convince folks to, hey, maybe you should get on Twitter, or maybe you should, you know, hop on a Google Plus Hangout with us, or things like that, and really go out there and share what you're experiencing and the privilege you have to do the job that you're doing, and share that with as many people as possible. And so, it's pretty easy to figure out and convince folks to get online and really share with us what's going on. So it's an incredible opportunity, and I think a lot of folks realize that. The astronauts have enthusiastically adopted it and everything, and so we hope that everybody's following along.
All right, Jason, it looks like you guys are getting to where you need to go. If you could just let people know where to follow and what you guys have coming up if they want to apply.
Sure. So we've always got new opportunities. The easiest place to follow everything that NASA has going on, we've got over 400 accounts, is by going to nasa.gov/connect, and that'll get you hooked up with all of our accounts. But our main feeds are at NASA and at NASA Social. And so as we have new events and everything going on, you know, we'll put announcements up on at NASA Social. So keep following and follow along for the next opportunities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, Jason with NASA Social. Again,
good reporting you, Gunn.
The reason why Andrew Main was as close as he was to this launch was the NASA social program. So everybody head on over, nasa.gov/connect.
They do a great job with outreach in all kinds of areas with NASA. It's pretty impressive for they wouldn't necessarily have a natural motivation to do this, but I think he hit on it, which is these people are really excited about space. They're excited about astrophysics. You know, if you subscribe to the This Week in NASA podcast, you get all kinds of different voices from all different people providing the segments. They do a lot of interviews with employees, talking to them about outreach and the importance of what they work. They talk to the folks that are in the teams that are working on things, not just on the pretty faces, you know, the really exciting, the Elon Musks or the astronauts. Sure. And that's why I love subscribing to that, because you get a real good inside look.
Well, I think there's also it's a smart move on their part, because I think it's a necessary response to the real restructuring of the NASA budget that we've seen. Obviously, at the height of the Cold War and the space race, you didn't need to have a Twitter feed to remind people to get excited about what they're up to. But nowadays, you know, they're a leaner, more science focused, you know, institution. And that's part of the reason that they need to remind people why they should be excited about their next mission.
Now, Andrew, where are you walking now?
Okay, so right now there's a press facility, which it's really awesome. I'm gonna pan over here. We'll see what we can see in the in this light, as I don't get run over. So when you watch the old space launches, you know, all the Apollo missions, all that stuff, these were covered largely from right here, okay? There's right in that light in the distance, you'll see there's actually broadcasters on top of a platform doing a broadcast. As I pan over here, there's a CBS building, there's a press building, and so there's like the, you know, this is kind of like sort of old school NASA. That building that Jason mentioned right over here, I mean, that's that huge, huge, huge thing where they put the space shuttle together. I geeked out because, like, over there, there's, like, just a giant, like, mechanism for carrying rockets around. So just about anything awesome you ever saw. I mean, standing right here is where the cameras were when the Apollo spacecraft took off, when, you know, man's, you know, the American exploration of space took place. The coverage came from just this right, you know, area here. There's a launch countdown clock, which I'm going to walk towards so we can see. Just so you can see that. That's the... where they would cover that, and there's a lot of the vehicles here that would, you know, the news vehicles that would do that, and then you'd get, you know, your broadcasters and stuff, and your internet celebrities standing over there checking their Twitter feed. The camera's kind of big, and then so this is the launch clock. I'm gonna walk up over close here to see that. It's pretty rad because of the fact that, you know, there's the palm trees up above here. But when you talk about history, when you talk about, you know, we've got a 50-year history now. 50-year history, actually, this is the 2012 is the 50-year anniversary of the Cape Canaveral complex, which we then named, you know, the Kennedy complex. A lot of history here. I mean, just so much awesome stuff's taking place here. You had Vandenberg, which did a lot of the launches. But in the background here, I'm going to see if I can walk a little closer.
our local news truck. That, you're not going to, you know, obviously on this phone, it's going to be kind of tiny, but that glowing thing you see back there is the clock, and that is now 34 minutes, 40 seconds. That's from the time of liftoff now, so it keeps counting.
So it's the count up instead of the countdown.
Yeah. And that's how long, by the way, I mean, that just to give you a sense of time, you know, that, that this podcast has been going in that time, it's separated. It's now in orbit. Like, you know, that's how quickly this goes from, the East Coast of Florida, the Space Coast of Florida, to space.
And then, and why does it take so many orbits to get itself to where it could dock with the ISS? Do you know the answer to that, Andrew?
I don't have an intelligent answer to that, but part of what that has to do is, remember, it needs to match the speed of the ISS. And to match that speed can be either accelerating or decelerating, because you're talking about, you know, when you're in orbit, you're going over 20,000 miles per hour, okay? You're going extremely fast. And in order to have two bullets trying to dock, and, you know, and it takes time to make orbital corrections to get to that point where you're able to do that. And when it, you know, doing multiple orbits, and part of before they do the docking too, is they'll reach way before they do the docking a synchronous orbit, but they want to, you know, basically go through a system of tests, because if that thing heads at the ISS too fast, it's a missile. So
yeah,
that's a big part of it.
Wow. It's such an amazing thing. And like what we've been talking about, it obviously we've made a lot of equivalencies to commercial air travel, but you know, when you think about that, it's incredibly complex. You know, yeah. When you break down exactly what we've done in terms of moving things from one place to another, it seems mundane now, and the idea that this is becoming mundane is just amazing. It just feels like achievement unlocked. You know, like we've gained enough XP and we've leveled up to the point where now we can just shoot rockets into space. You know,
they've got a model of the Mars Curiosity rover here. I'm going to pan over so you guys can see it.
All right. All right. A little prop comedy here on the street.
Amazing.
As what looks
it's
to be a
staged.
Mini Cooper. Yes. Yes.
When you're talking about the equivalency to airplanes, too, it made me start to wonder what sub-developments we may see when this becomes regular. If we have a dozen companies who are supplying International Space Station, if we have private satellites become common and occupied satellites, space hotels, all kinds of things that could be developed. Are there?
I mean, if we're putting on our speculation hat, if we're just going to make wild predictions,
never happens here on the show.
Well, I was just, yes, before, Brian, if I could just finish real quick, what I was going to say is, will we be able to like take a suborbital rocket to Beijing from San Francisco? Will that become cost effective rather than taking a long airplane flight?
There's number a company, one, absolutely, I think called, yes, Yinx, working on that.
One of the things we were talking about is with the idea of a three stage. Completely reusable rocket. The fact that each of the stage, I believe Andrew crunched the numbers and figured out that you're now looking at the cost just of fuel, a 737, and obviously, certainly for the rich, that will be the go-to way to get around is by multi-stage reusable rocket. But to me, the big surprise that I'm looking forward to is as we see a future where not only are payloads, private payloads, able to get up into space, but more importantly, private experiments are able to be run in space. And I look forward to the day when some enterprising high school puts together enough money that they're able to get a particular experiments funded in zero G to make some kind of significant discovery and scoop the entire scientific establishment. Because oftentimes that's how these things happen, is once you have this complete decentralization of power, you get people who waste their own money on nutty things they want to try and discover, you know, these important technological leaps that move society forward.
Right, because right now high schools do experiments all the time. There's a program for it, but they're experiments that are carefully approved and vetted and generally not groundbreaking research. What you're talking about is more interesting, which is somebody's like, yeah, I don't need anybody's approval to do this. I'm just going to try it, see what happens.
What Brian's really talking about is space meth. That is his point.
I think I'm looking forward to the day when a high school can hold their prom in space so they can dance instead of letting the stodgy town disallow it.
Nobody puts SpaceX in a corner.
Hey, gentlemen, I am going to end my part here so I can go into the briefing thing. I don't know if they'll be happy with me
live streaming, or not,
but yes. So
what happened to freedom of the press?
I don't know, I'll go in there. Let's take a look in there. All right.
Yeah. We can understand if you don't talk.
Yeah.
In fact, many might find it to be a pleasing experience.
Oh. Especially now that he can't
now
answer
that he can't
you.
Talk.
Nice. Yeah.
If you ever had anything you ever wanted to tell Andrew Mate, now's the time.
Exactly. Now, for those of you listening to this on audio, this is a shot of Andrew going in. This is the briefing area here for NASA. All sorts of models, video footage of the SpaceX launch. I do know that Elon Musk is in Canaveral. I don't know if he is going to be a part of this particular press briefing that is happening right now. But again, 40 minutes. In 40 minutes from the point of this launch, this thing is now in orbit, well on its way to the International Space Station. And when they're sitting down to talk about it, just fascinating.
Yeah, I guess we're not going to hear anything just yet. They're getting ready.
No, yeah, they're getting ready. Although Andrew
seems to be hitting the snack table.
Of course, Andrew. It's been only an hour or so since Andrew's had a press pass, and he's always he's already picked up on the best part of being a credentialed member of the media: the spread.
Second problem to campaign finance reform. Right to
let me tell you about man's exploration of space, guys.
Chocolate chip cookies. So, folks, listen,
how much is that chocolate chip cookie costing Elon Musk right now?
They were able to get this for $50. NASA was paying $3,000.
Already, the efficiencies are made apparent.
Of course, absolutely. Whereas now that Andrew is off a bus with NASA people within earshot, we're right back to the overrun jokes.
As soon as I step off, yeah, my pass is getting revoked.
Sir, can you come with us, please?
Amazing.
Andrew Mayne, we know no Andrew Mayne that was ever here.
Now, obviously, these are members of the press. They are meant to be impartial. But, is there a sense of excitement amongst the people that covered it, or at least some of these social people that like you that were brought in by NASA Social?
I certainly see enthusiasm. I mean, I mainly been talking to you guys, so I don't know. I could take a read of people here, but then I might get kicked out. But you get a lot of. I think the story is growing. I'll put it that way. I think that we get mission after mission is people kind of we're coming down from we've no longer have the space shuttle capability, and now we're trying to look at what does NASA do now. And so I think the certainly attention there is now changing into focus between this. There'll be the orbital sciences and stuff. And so, Justin, you're more familiar with these sort of press briefings than I am, so I would not know how to gauge any of that.
Well, if anybody has any reaction, that means they're very excited. if they're not looking like it's a really boring job, then they're thrilled. Mm-hmm. And usually you can tell the excitement of the press corps based on how much food there is.
Mm. They're doing a pretty good job of working their way through it.
Hey guys, I'd hate to do this, but unfortunately, I'm actually not at home, and I've got to actually bolt. But this was awesome. I'm so thrilled that I made it back in front of a computer just in time to see this. I can only imagine what it must have been like to be standing there as suddenly night turns into day, and then the sun just flies away into the night. That's got to be awesome.
Hey Brian, make me a promise here. Make everybody a promise, okay?
Okay.
That when they do the Falcon Heavy launch, which should be at Vandenberg next year,
yes,
you will move heaven and hell to do your best to come out there and see that with me and Justin.
Oh, my God. This is, you know what this is right here? You see that in your face? That's my pinky. And if you thought it was something else, shame on you. That's me giving a pinky promise to do the best I can, because that would be freaking amazing.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe
they're launching a Heavy?
Oh, yeah. Falcon Heavy.
All right.
It's a big deal.
Largest rocket since Saturn, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What is so the next SpaceX launch, Andrew? What is that?
The next SpaceX launch, I don't know. There's going to be the Orbital Sciences launch coming up, but I don't know when that is. I'm going to show you something cool. There's a poster in back here. I'm going to see if we can't explain it, because I don't know if we'll quite be able to see that. But it is a. It's great to kind of see the poster here. And it shows an astronaut, and it says, same crew, new ride, commercial crew. And
oh, cool.
Kind of the idea here, you know, the idea there is that the, you know, the mission continues, you know, that, you know, how you get there may change, but the idea of, it's about the people, it's about getting people into space, it's about discovery, which is, you know, a great attitude here.
And that's all that's really important.
Well, all right, guys. I gotta run. I'll catch you guys.
See you later.
Back to normal next week. See you guys.
Absolutely.
From his secret location deep beneath the earth, Brian Breslin, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I'll tell you what, Andrew. Do you wanna hang on and see if we can capture the press briefing? Do we have any idea on how long that might be?
Well, I think, I don't know, but I think if you want to do that, that, you know, the NASA feed will have a better
way to do that.
Yeah. I just, real quick here, there's a great model in here of the International Space Station, which is the destination. And the thing that gets forgotten often is how big this thing is. This is just a model, real thing, larger than a football field. Look at a football field. This thing is bigger, okay? That's up in space. It's a real thing. I mean, we are a space civilization right now. We have people living there. We're doing work on Mars, and, you know, this is an important kind of thing in that regard to remember.
I built one little piece at a time. Like, I remember when they launched in the late 90s, the first little can that went up there, and they kind of had to, it was a dual purpose thing. And now it's like a storage locker, that first piece that they lived in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, kind of like a vacation cabin.
Yeah.
Well, that is fantastic. I guess I'll tell you, we'll start to wrap things up here. Andrew, any final thoughts on this entire launch and, you know, what it means?
I think, you know, we you know, the word of the day is that now, you know, space is in business. You know, it went from being, you know, Elon Musk just about a decade ago had a crazy idea that he could make a difference in space exploration and give us capabilities we didn't have before. And he did that. And, you know, that's how these things start. You know, people with ideas and how to make it happen. And NASA more than willing to adjust to times and to adapt and to take use of, you know, good ideas and good technology has certainly met the challenge of that. And, you know, we're in a much better place than we were 5 or 6 years ago, where we had no idea what the future of, you know, space exploration as a whole would go into, you know, and not just American space, but space in general. And that, you know, most of the technology we had was Cold War technology driven by militarization, where now we have space technology driven by a very, very hopeful idea that we will live in space, that we'll be a space civilization. And that's exciting.
Absolutely. Tom, final thoughts?
Yeah, I just, you know, really excited about all kinds of things in space. I've been a fan ever since I was a little kid, you know, watching the Soyuz mission where the Apollo-Soyuz folks linked up and shook hands in space. That's the earliest memory I have of covering this stuff. And it never gets old, seeing a rocket launch off of the ground and go up into the heavens and know that it's actually up there and it's orbiting and there's people up there, and just kind of bringing that whole reminder here is great. The extra added sort of meta narrative here is that we're going to have more people with more opportunities to do this. And that's really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, like you said very, very well, it never gets old, but hopefully through us doing it constantly and cheaply and reliably, one day it will. And that will be a beautiful, beautiful day. All right. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to wrap up the Weird Things podcast. I'm Justin Robert Young. Thanks, of course, to our regular crew, Brian Brushwood and Andrew Main. And, of course, our special guest, Tom Merritt. Thanks to Leo Laporte and Lisa Kensel for letting us borrow the Twit studio and the live stream for the evening. And, of course, Jammer B, our technical director here, who has done a fantastic job of not only coordinating all the Skype stuff, but also switching in between the audio feeds for NASA and SpaceX. I think we might stay on the stream for a little bit longer, but Andrew, would you like to do the honors of ending the episode?
Hey, thank you, everybody. It's been weird.
To sponsor the podcast, do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.